Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman and joined in studio by Walker Wildman, AFA Vice President of Operations. And now, as is typical most weekdays, Steve Jordahl steps in during the last segment of today's issues.
Got to rescue y'all.
You know. Yeah, save us from ourselves. He's a reporter and news anchor for American Family News. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Well, we'll see. We'll see whether it's good for us to have you here. So, all right, what's on your mind in terms of important stories to cover this half hour?
Let's start with some presidential Democrat candidate news. I want to start here. You know, Beto O'Rourke has been doing his, I'm calling him diner tours. He seems to always be in a diner, standing on a table, kind of campaigning to who's ever there. And he was in Cleveland, Ohio yesterday at one of his diner stops, standing on a counter, and somebody came up, one of the people
standing
there,
on a counter, really?
Yeah, he does. Have you not seen those videos?
I haven't.
He likes to get up and he stands on the lunch counter. He's, I don't know.
Yeah, when he does the speeches? Yeah, yeah. I saw that too. It's kind of odd.
Yeah, he just gets up above everybody and talks down to them. But, you know, he's born for this after all.
Yes, that's what we heard.
But he was asked a question, and this is about, someone asked him about his stance on abortion. But I want you to listen to the person who asked the question as much as the answer. Go ahead and play clip whatever it is.
Are you for third trimester abortions, or are you going to protect the lives of third trimester babies? Because, you know, there's really not a medical necessity for abortion. It's, the doctors would just do a C-section, and you don't have to kill the baby in that essence. So are you for or against third trimester abortion?
So the question is about abortion and reproductive rights. And my answer to you is that should be a decision that the woman makes. I trust her.
So he trusts the woman. But what a courageous question from a pro-life
reporter.
Well, I don't know if it was a reporter or just someone in the diner. I don't know who asked the question. They didn't identify that. But someone to actually nail down a Democrat candidate with some life language.
You know what I just heard there? I'm for third trimester abortions.
No, and that is the important part. Yes. Yeah. He is all in for abortion. He's right along with the New York and Virginia governors and everything.
And quickly made it clear. He's obviously prepared for these kinds of questions because he repeated the question as if he wants to make sure everyone could hear it. And he said, okay, the question was about reproductive rights.
Abortion and reproductive rights. Abortion and it wasn't about reproductive rights.
And what is also disheartening is that the questioner, whoever she is, reporter or just someone in the diner, talking about the fact that you can do a C-section and you don't have to kill the baby, he gives his little spin. I trust the mother on this, and the other women, you could hear the women. There are women in there. You could hear their voices. They were clapping, and I was thinking, wow. You just, in terms of the way this played out, you're just clapping for the murder of third trimester babies. Mm. How sad for you.
Yeah.
And how horrifying for our country. Mm-hmm. So.
And then I wanted to listen in a little bit on a town hall that New York senator and presidential candidate Kirsten Gillibrand had last night. This is in Michigan. And a woman stood up. Chris Hayes was moderating this. A woman stood up and said, "My parents are first generation immigrants from a Muslim country." And she says, "President Trump's Muslim ban and now this New Zealand massacre is making my parents feel unsafe at church, in the mosque."
Mosque.
And this is what Gillibrand had to say about that. Cut one.
One of the reasons why I'm running for president is because what Donald Trump has done to this country. He's made her family afraid to worship. He has spread fear and hate and degradation across this country. He has spewed hate, racism, anti-Semitism, and has inspired more. Now, Donald Trump did not create hate and racism and bigotry and anti-Semitism. But what he has done is poured fuel on a fire that is raging more than I've ever seen it in my lifetime. Hate crimes have gone up exponentially all across my state, all across the country, because of what President Trump has unleashed.
There you go. I think I'm putting her down as a maybe for President Trump in the 2020 election.
WAPO, Washington Post, would do a Pinocchio check on her on that. Because this is why the media is so dishonest and the media and Democrats are in bed with each other. Because they keep repeating this half-truth that hate crimes are on the rise. Not just
on the rise, exponentially.
They're skyrocketing.
Yes,
and they won't mention that the reason they're, quote, on the rise, skyrocketing, is because 1,000 extra law enforcement agencies are importing results into the database. And so it's they're going up, but because there's more people reporting it. So it's but the whoever runs the story is not going to mention that in there.
And plus they are changing the categories for what constitutes a hate crime. So people who say this person's speech made me feel uncomfortable, I want to report that as a hate crime. Right. So there were several, I call them lies, but to be charitable, they're the Pinocchio kind of things where exaggerations, half-truths. So she, I'll tell you what, let's replay that. I want to count how many things in there.
How many Pinocchios?
Yeah, how many Pinocchios?
Ed is going to do a Pinocchio check.
Yeah, I want to find out how many half-truths or exaggerations. Go ahead and replace that.
One of the reasons why I'm running for president is because what Donald Trump has done to this country. He has made her family afraid to worship. He has spread fear and hate and degradation across this country. He has spewed hate, racism, anti-Semitism, and has inspired more. Now, Donald Trump did not create hate and racism and bigotry and anti-Semitism, but what he has done is poured fuel on a fire that is raging more than I've ever seen it in my lifetime. Hate crimes have gone up exponentially all across my state, all across the country, because of what President Trump has unleashed.
Okay, so here's the connections, okay, the things that she is... Go ahead.
I'm just going to say... Both of you, you really can't put facts at her. Didn't you hear she was almost crying?
Oh, that was the first thing I realized.
Don't confront that fake, with facts.
Fake cry.
I know.
How insensitive.
It was fake tears. And I could get myself in trouble talking about the ability of some women to turn on the tears, okay, at the appropriate moment when they want something, okay? Now, I don't know any women who are like that. Okay, I'm just going to say that.
I'm not married to any women who are like that.
But my wife has never been that way. But anyway, so she is saying President Trump has been spewing hate and racism and anti-Semitism across the nation. Okay, now I would say, what's your proof? Her answer, I am almost positive, and any of the Democratic candidates would say, whenever he says something I disagree with, it's hate, it's racism, it's anti-Semitism. Okay? The man recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. He's been pro-Israel. How is that any Semitic? Lady, if you want to talk about, excuse me, Congresswoman, if you want to talk about anti-Semitism in your party, Senator, excuse me, I'm on track here, Steve.
Sorry.
Let me go on my roll here. And then that was cold. Okay, Senator Gillibrand, if you want to talk about anti-Semitism in your party, let's talk about Omar and the so-called resolution trying to condemn the anti-Semitic comments coming from a freshman congresswoman in your party. So anything that President Trump says she disagrees with is hatred, racism, and anti-Semitism. Yeah. Then she says that these kind of hate crimes have been going up exponentially because of Donald Trump. So it's not going up exponentially, and you can't prove that it's because of Donald Trump, but you are going to promote that as your argument. And I don't know how you would connect that to whatever hate crimes you have in mind. But let's talk about Jussie Smollett, okay? Fake hate crimes, maybe those are going up exponentially, but... Anyway, all right, I'm done my rant.
And they would say, she would say, that because President Trump wants to tighten down on illegal immigration, that that is hateful, that's bigotry, that's Islamophobic or whatever. Yeah, they called his travel ban when he first got in office Islamophobic.
So a Muslim ban.
Right. Yeah. They called it a Muslim ban.
All right, that was a little bit of a rant.
That's okay.
Okay, I probably just need a Snickers bar.
I'm just glad you got it off your chest, Ed.
Yeah, I'm just maybe a little hangry. Yeah. But, okay, what else?
All right, so in the midst of blaming President Trump for everything, we're starting to hear a little bit from the different communities, and one of the communities, there was just a poll out that said that support for President Trump among Latinos is on the rise. So while he's being bigoted and hostile and calling all these Mexicans rapists and criminals, the Hispanics themselves are actually a little bit finding themselves more comfortable with him. I wanted to play you a cut from a man that was on CNN. His name is Rolando Rodriguez, and I believe he was just a kind of a man-on-the-street interview.
I like the way you roll your R's.
That's
good.
Thank you. Rolando Rodriguez.
Rolando Rodriguez.
And but anyway, this is what he had to say about the border wall specifically. Cut eight.
I don't think the wall is going to be a barrier really for the good people. It'll be a barrier for the bad people.
That's it was only 7 seconds. So yeah, this is a Mexican national who thinks, yeah, let's go with this wall. It's going to work.
Now, he's living in the country, in the U.S., or is he from Mexico?
No, I think he's in the United States.
In the United States, okay.
And he's right that it's going to stop the bad people and not the good people, because the good people, guess what they do? They go through the legal steps to enter the United States. And right. The lawbreakers, and see, here's another thing where the media is dishonest, is what they don't recognize is anyone who crosses the border illegally, they're all criminals. Children, wives, daughters, husbands, they all are breaking our laws, so they're therefore all criminals, and so they have disrespect for our laws. So that's across the board, anybody who crosses our border illegally, they're committing crimes. But he's right that the good people are going to wait in line, and that's who we want to come in the country.
I keep hearing people say, we need to get the Statue of Liberty. Bring me your huddled masses, you're tired, you're poor. We've lost that. We're angry at immigrants. And what nobody seems to point out is everybody that came, the huddled masses in the 1800s that were coming over, came through Ellis Island.
Yeah, well, they were processed.
They were processed. A lot of them were sent home if they had a disease or if they were on a list of some sort. They were turned around and put right back on the boat.
By the way, it always seems to me that that interpretation of the statement at the foot of the Statue of Liberty, or it's on the Statue of Liberty, that's misinterpreting. Correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding always was that wasn't the United States saying to the world, send me your huddled masses, your poor. That was liberty inviting people to, in other words, to enjoy liberty as the way to get out of fear and poverty. And am I misunderstanding that?
I hadn't heard. Maybe you're right.
I always thought that was the correct interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Even if we
weren't inviting the whole world to come to America by putting up the Statue of Liberty, it was Liberty herself saying, give me your poor. And in other words, liberty will set people free.
Right.
Nonetheless, there was a time in the late 1800s, early 1900s, when immigration really picked up a lot of people coming over from poorer countries, and they came in through Ellis Island, and they made the potato famine in Ireland, for example, thousands or tens of millions, maybe, of Irish people. They congregated in Boston and in New York, and they made communities and they assimilated. But anyway, they generally came through legally. So
yeah, and just to point out, and we don't want to get into a big discussion about immigration, but when you have an ocean between, like both my parents. My dad's third or fourth generation Italian. My mom was born and grew, and she came over with her family from Greece when she was 11 or 12 years old. So both my sides of my family come from immigrant stock. But when you have an ocean between this country and Italy and Greece, you assimilate. You know what? Because there's no going back across that ocean.
Right. Yeah.
When you just cross the Rio Grande, though, and you can go back and forth, there's no real reason to assimilate. You come over here for what you want, and then you go back over. That's why you have a lot of Mexican children at times, young people who will fly the Mexican flag at their school because they have no real reason to assimilate. They're,
right.
They could go back anytime they wanted.
So. It's also harder to get here illegally. You have to swim a long
way. Oh, yeah. That's a deterrent.
Mm-hmm. All right.
By the way, any numbers on the Hispanic support for President Trump?
I should have brought that in. I didn't look at
it. I'm wanting to say a few months ago a poll came out where the Hispanic support was going up. I don't know the exact numbers, but it was going up for President Trump. And one of the attributing reasons there is because the Latinos who are in America legally, they went through the right steps.
Right.
To get here.
And we welcome them.
And I've read news reports where some of those Latino people who are U.S. citizens are upset at the illegal immigrants because they're cutting line
right.
in what it took some of these, 40, 50, 60-year-olds who have been here for 20 or 30 years, what it took them years to get. These people are crossing the Rio Grande and stealing their jobs.
Right.
In the November elections of, would have been 2018, November elections, 32% of Latinos voted Republican.
That's pretty high.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, what else you got?
Let's talk about Devin Nunes, who's the ranking member on the very influential Judicial Committee Judiciary Committee? The one that was doing the Russia investigation in the House.
I think it's the House Intelligence.
Intelligence Committee. Anyway, he is suing Twitter and three of its users for $250 million. Now,
is
Twitter.
Is that the number? Is that the I'm not it talking about that.
It seems to be.
It seems to be because that's what Sandman is suing. Mm-hmm. That's from Covington Catholic High School in Kentucky. He's suing CNN and others. So $250 million seems to be the number everyone's going for.
I'm not sure why. It may be a nod to that. I don't know because Twitter, that's a drop in the bucket for Twitter. But maybe not for these users. He's got three users who maligned him, he says, during his running of the Russia investigation. He's alleging he was defamed and that social media enacted in shadow banning of conservative Republican opinions. So the things that he the users that he is going after called him one user account was called Devin Nunes' cow for some reason, but there was a lot of fire Devin Nunes. That was the second account, and Devin Nunes Grapes, for some reason, was the third account. But they're going after people now. That's kind of scary. I understand it, but man, if you're a Twitter user.
Well, and also it appears that Congressman Nunes has evidence that Twitter promoted some of this stuff on its platform. So not only did Twitter provide the platform for the slander, mm-hmm. but they also promoted it in some instances. And so, but this is an interesting case because this moves his Devin Nunes case here is trying to shift Twitter from a platform to a publisher. And he has a pretty good point here in that Twitter is all in the business of regulating what's on its platform, which gets it into being
a publisher.
Yeah, publisher, which you can sue, and sometimes you can
and
win.
That's a good distinction. A platform, they're saying, we just give you, basically we're giving you a chalkboard. Write whatever you want on it. We're not responsible for it.
Yeah. Right.
We're just giving you the chalk and the board. Publisher now, what
has Walker editorial saying, control.
Saying we will allow you to write this message and that message, but not the other message.
Exactly. Well, this none of us have ever walked this way before, so this is all new. So even the thing with the student and the company, we're talking about Nick Sandman, going after some of the public, the social media groups in his lawsuit. And now, Devin Nunes is a public figure. There's usually a higher bar for public figures, yeah. But we don't know really how to treat these Facebook and some of these other social media companies like Twitter and others. We're not it's because it's so new, relatively speaking, we're not sure how to categorize them. And so these lawsuits may help us figure that out, because to your point, Walker, mm-hmm. that's been the big argument, is that these social media companies have pretty strict regulations as to what kind of speech they'll allow. And so they do at times seem more like a publisher than just a
platform. Let me bring Google into this as well.
Sure.
Because Google has banned use of advertising for a Christian video on same-sex marriage. I don't know if you're familiar with Michael Brown, the columnist.
Yeah.
He did a video that portrayed the marriages between a man and a woman and then paid to promote it. Well, it so happened that it showed up on a couple LGBT sites. They did not like that. People complained. Do you know that Google has a listserv, a little bulletin board, an online bulletin board that has 30,000 members just internal to Google? And their job is policing microaggressions. And this was a microaggression, and a vice president.
Well, let our listener know what a microaggression is, because it sounds serious. What you just said.
Well, it sounds micro serious.
Yes.
A microaggression you're seeing a lot on college campuses. This is not an assault where you're committing a crime. It's basically when someone gets offended at what you say, their feelings get hurt.
And so Google has 10,000 people internal.
30,000
who monitor. What might upset somebody?
Right.
See, and that right there, that is a publisher.
Sure.
Historically speaking, that is a publisher. And I think this is going to come back to bite these big tech giants, because they've shifted away from let's just take down illegal conduct, let's just take down child pornography, let's just take down threatening messages, to let's just filter whatever we don't think is appropriate in our eyes. And I think there's a lawsuit out there pending. Maybe it's Devin Nunes. Maybe it's the Catholic school kids. Who knows? But we could see a huge victory there.
I wanted to end our little session here today with
It's not a little session.
I'm sorry.
This is an important program. Very important.
And that was a microaggression.
I was insulted. I'm sorry. I wanted to get light. I want to get a little lighter here. Did you know I bring you a case of life imitating art. The U.S. military is looking to develop and test weapons it can blast into space and fire at targets on the Earth. That's right.
The Death Star. Now, that just sounds like an old guy falling asleep in the recliner. That was terrible, Steve.
Good try.
So this is This is Death Star kind of technology.
It is. They want to launch a satellite into space, and they have lasers and particle beams that they want to fire from it, and I don't know, take out enemies, change the weather, interfere with your cell phone conversation. I don't know what they're going to do with it. But
I think now they've been doing this particle beam and laser development, research and development for decades.
Yes.
So they're wanting to now. The idea, my understanding is. Excuse me, is that these weapons would be used as anti-satellite weapons, in other words, knock out the Chinese satellites so they can't control their missiles, or knock down and destroy missiles that are launched. They wouldn't be used against some of these newer hypersonic missiles, but ICBMs, for example.
Sure.
If we thought that North Korea, here's one of the things that people have been worried about, had an EMP device, nuclear device, that it wanted to put in a satellite and detonate over the United States, we could take it out, maybe even without them knowing it. And so those kinds of weapons. I'm glad we're doing this kind of research, because I guarantee you the Russians and the Chinese are.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and Joe Biden probably is.
I think
Joe Biden's doing this kind of.
I think he is.
Yeah, he's his own satellite.
Zap anybody that criticizes him for giving
all right.
Rubs.
That was a reference to the previous segment. You didn't know what we were talking about there, Steve.
I guessed it.
Wasn't a particularly funny, but I thought I'd mention it anyway, and
go
over like a lead balloon shot down by a laser. All right, folks, that's all the time we have for today's issues. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and information, more great programming directly ahead on American Family Radio, to which you are listening. We'll see you tomorrow.